Hi, this is Steve O'Mooney, and you're listening to another production of the 4i Radio Network at 4iradio.com.
Today on Ranger Command Power Hour.
Now or never.
Wes! Hurry! You've got to stop him before he has a chance to activate the morpher!
Right. Eric, hand it over.
It's too late. No one's stopping me now.
Don't do it! Don't do it.
Quantum power!
Today on the Power Hour, Episode 36, Ranger Nation Interview, Dan Southworth. Recorded on March 3rd, 2015. Welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour on the 4i Radio Network. It's time to ranger up with your hosts. I'm Eric, also known as TrekkieB47.
I'm AP, also known as Secret Ranger Fan.
And I'm Zach, also known as the Cinema Slob.
Today we are interviewing Dan Southworth, best known in Ranger Nation as Eric Myers, the Quantum Ranger in Power Rangers Time Force. He is an accomplished actor with a wide experience in feature films, television shows, motion capture, voiceover, and commercials. He has devoted more than 10 years of training to the craft of acting, including 5 years with famed acting coach Ivana Chubbuck, and honed his skill at action with film director Andy Cheng, originally a member of Jackie Chan's Hong Kong stunt team. He also helped develop action sequences for Terrence Malick's The New World, took part in James Cameron's early visualizations of Avatar, and developed action for Neil Blomkamp's Halo 3 full combat web sequences. Most recently, he's appeared multiple times in Disney's Kickin' It, portrayed Kenshi in Mortal Kombat Legacy, played the lead role of Mark Leonard in Divergence, as well as writing and producing that series. Dan is popular among anime and video game fans for his role as Virgil in Devil May Cry 3 and Devil May Cry 3.5, which was released so that fans could experience the game as Dan's character. So welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Glad you could be here. And first, we wanted to give a big thanks to Susan Matisse for helping coordinate this interview. Big shout out to her. So Dan, wanted to ask, what made you want to get involved in the entertainment industry?
Oh, well, I came out here when I was 22, and I was doing a lot of demonstrations as a martial artist when I was younger, and I was really enjoying the entertainment aspect of it. And when I started competing, I competed as a full contact fighter, but then I also would compete in events where you did self-defense techniques and showed how they would be employed against one to as many as three or four assailants in different kinds of scenarios. And basically that's fight choreography, done on a live stage. And I was pretty good at it. I acquired some national titles at it in a few competitions that I did, and it was fun. So one of the kids in the studio that I was training at was the cousin of an actor, and I got introduced to a manager. I came down, tried it out, auditioned for the very first changeover of Power Rangers when Johnny Bosch was there. Johnny Bosch and I actually screen tested together for the same role. And they flowed me down, put me up in a hotel, and I figured, okay, I didn't know much about the entertainment industry then, but I figured if I had a big entertainment company flying me to Los Angeles to screen test off of one of my first auditions, I had to give it a shot. And, you know, I was a Jackie Chan fan. I was a Bruce Lee fan. I originally set out to become a martial arts action star. So that was sort of what led me down in this direction. Towards Los Angeles, when I say down from Northern California to Southern California.
So, well, speaking of martial arts, what martial arts have you studied?
I got my black belt in a form of Taekwondo and Kenpo. Basically, it was Taekwondo, and then the instructor added his Kenpo concepts into it. I did Judo competitively for 2 years. I wrestled collegiate and freestyle for 7 years. I do Jiu-Jitsu now. And I've been doing it for about 2.5 years. I did some full contact. I fought full contact Taekwondo. I did a lot of kickboxing. I studied for a few months at the Inosono Academy. For the martial art geeks out there, they know who that is and what that means. That was Bruce Lee's protege student and ended up, you know, teaching Bruce Lee's legacy. And then I studied privately with one of his students, a man named Steve Grody, in a warehouse in downtown Los Angeles that couldn't be any more quintessential, stereotypical old master in terms of every romanticized idea of what a master instructor is. I would travel all the way downtown and park on some shady little alley and walk into an abandoned building up these creaky stairs, and inside this giant loft with concrete walls was this guy who lived there, and he's who I studied a lot of my Jin Fan concepts, which is Jeet Kune Do and knife fighting style from. He's who I continued to study with for years afterwards, and I still study with him to this day.
Nice. Is there any like new styles or practicing what you?
I've become pretty adept at kicking and punching. I was always a good grappler. Jiu-Jitsu is going to be the final piece to that puzzle in my martial arts experience. And then I probably won't take on a new style for a while. I've got all four ranges of combat covered. I'm pretty satisfied with my skill set. I'm not planning to be the next UFC champion, so I don't have to I don't have to go and find a gym to go and train at full-on hardcore, but I'm satisfied with what the ability of my skills and what I need them for. What I spend most of my time training are still my acrobatic skills and even my acrobatic kicks, because that's the kind of stuff that makes you agile and able to perform exciting stuff in martial arts choreography, even though I don't use that stuff that much. It seems these days I tend, and I think because of mixed martial arts, there tends to be a little less of the dynamic stuff. And I like that. My personal taste has always been something more akin to what you saw in the very first Bourne Identity movies. In fact, I got a chance to do a lot of the choreography for some of the Bourne Identity games.
Oh, wow.
With knife fighting. I was called in to help do some extra knife fighting and hand-to-hand combat and even some free-running stuff for the Bourne character. And that was fun. That I enjoyed quite a bit. That's my preference. That's what I like to do, but you have to be able to do a little bit more than that, of course, to be versatile and be open and available to a lot of the work that may or may not be. Mm-hmm.
And that's something I was going to ask you. You've had so many different roles in television, film, acting and stunts and voice acting, motion capture, writing and producing with Divergence.
Let me just say that let me cut you off real quick and add to that list. Last night, I got to actually dub over a Russian film. It was the first time I actually got to be an actor, English actor, dubbing the voice of a foreign actor in a Russian film. And I can't say the title of it yet until it's done and everything, but there is a Russian film out there with this Russian guy is walking around with my voice in the English version. It's pretty freaking awesome. I had a great time doing it. Sorry to cut you off. I hope you don't forget what you're asking.
No, that's really, you'll definitely have to tweet it out there
It was so ironic growing up with all those kung fu movies, watching those bad English dubs. Here I was dubbing over this Russian-made movie it was pretty funny.
But that's what I was going to say. Do you enjoy one more than the other? It seems you're really big into motion capture with video gaming.
I have a lot of experience with motion capture, but in the last about three years, I haven't really been doing, I would say 2 years actually, I haven't really been doing much motion capture. The last big titles I was lucky enough to participate on were Battlefield 4, Killzone 4, and I am working on a new project as it happens. I just randomly got a call 2 weeks ago to ask my availability to work for 2 weeks on this project coming up. It's got a code name, so I can't even tell you what the real name of the game is yet.
Oh, wow.
But it'll appear on my list of credits when it's appropriate to release the date and the fact that I've worked on it. But most of my experience is film and television, actually. Most of my credits are film and television. Although there's, you know, and if motion capture performance is actually counted as acting, which, by the way, it is, you really do have to have a solid set of acting skills to do some of this motion capture performance. And nowadays, not just some of it, but most of it. Then, you know, my list of credits would probably be double. I've got a lot of motion capture, but it's not the main thing I do. You know, you can do a whole game in 2 weeks versus working on a film, which might take 3 months to a year, or a television show, which might take, you know, a few weeks to do. You pack more in during the year. You can pack about 3 games in per every film you do per year when the frequency is high. The video game industry has been going through a little bit of a change over, and so there just hasn't been as high a volume of those projects to work on lately.
I see.
So what was the question? Which one do I prefer?
Yeah, out of all the different roles that you've done, do you enjoy one more than the others or that you
bad
wish
guys.
You could do more of?
Bad guys are my favorite.
Bad guys
are my favorite. They're fun. The producers leave you alone. They don't have preconceived notions of how these characters should act, and you get to have a lot of fun with them. But that doesn't mean I don't like playing heroes. I love playing heroes.
Yeah.
My favorite are the anti-heroes, of course. Those are the heroes I grew up with. In terms of medium or venue, everyone's a little bit different. Voice acting is a slightly different set of skills than stage performing. It's a slightly different set of skills than performing in front of camera. Mm-hmm. And it's just like painting with a different brush or using a different medium to draw a picture. There's just, you have to sort of shift modes a little bit and it keeps it interesting. It definitely doesn't get boring when you have an opportunity to do a few types of different projects. Mm-hmm. And motion capture is this weird zone in between film and stage where you kind of have to be bigger, but you can't be too big because it looks weird. What's fun about motion capture, though, is that it's all completely in your head. You're on a stage that's a giant grid. And when I say grid, there's giant black tape marks that are drawn out in a grid pattern, and that usually sort of delineates the zone between off the volume and on the volume. And on the volume means that's the area where all the cameras are fixed and can capture your motion, right? And so you actually have to create the world around you. And they give you references and pictures to look at, but really when you're in that volume acting or performing a character or in the moment, it's all in your head. It's all in your head. And that crate in front of you is
it could be a car or
it could be a
barrel.
The opening to a spaceship or another portal of dimension, right? So I like it because it requires a lot more creativity. It requires you to engage a lot more of your creativity, and that can be a lot of fun. The downside to it is that because there's no set changes or locations changes or equipment to move around and stuff to light, you blast through scene after scene after scene after scene. So 8 hours of work in a motion capture environment is a lot of dialogue, a lot of acting, a lot of information and character to process and bring to life. And that can be pretty exhausting by the end of the day. I miss being on a set where you don't have to think about stuff sometimes. You know, the table's right there in front of you, and that's the table. You can use, actually, you know, items in front of you to inform your character and where he is and what's going on. That takes a little bit of a less of a psychic focus, I suppose. But, you know, either way you look at it, you do have to focus and concentrate a lot when you're performing a character.
When you did Virgil for Devil May Cry, did you do both the motion capture and the voice?
Yes, that's correct.
And is that done at the same time or differently? Do they capture performances?
Sometimes. The technology then was not quite as far along as it is now. Now they have smaller cameras that they can put in front of your face and capture your facial performance at the same time. I believe back then we had a separate session just for facial performance. So you had to watch yourself doing the motion capture performance and then create the expression just for the camera that was capturing the information on your face. Nowadays, they can do both at the same time. That allows you to have more congruency in performance or more of a match in performance. Sometimes they'll capture the voice data at the same time, so they'll put a mic on you. And they'll try to get as much as they can from the actual physical performance as possible. But usually what happens is you shoot the motion, and then you reshoot it again with the voice stuff, just you doing the voice stuff in front of a microphone, matching to the performance. Sometimes will either mean they're just focusing on your facial performance so they can get the details and then put that on to the... And that's why a lot of times you can get actors that are doing the voice and face that are different actors than the ones doing the motion. So what they can do is take, pick and choose the qualities they like of each of the performers and put them together into one, which isn't quite as satisfying as an actor because you don't get to own that whole persona. But and it's done in any sort of different combination of that. You know, sometimes they'll pick one guy to do everything. Sometimes they'll mix it up.
We actually had, throughout this, we gathered some questions from our listeners. So Epi Sanchez on Facebook said, other than, I assume, Devil May Cry and Street Fighter, are there any other video games that you actually like to play? And I want to add to that, do you even have time to play video games?
I used to play a lot of video games when I was a kid. I would I would make myself stop though to get outside and do something active. I mean, I was always active in sports. I grew up with all of the consoles from the Atari to the Commodore to Nintendo to the Sega Genesis. We grew up with all that kind of stuff. And then I'd say kind of early in my 30s, I was playing a lot of MMOs. I was playing Dark Ages of Camelot online, and I was playing EverQuest. And I was really digging that stuff. But the problem with it, I was starting to spend, you know, 40 hours in a weekend. Mining for attributes and items, and it's just like, oh my God, I'm staring at my guitar in the corner, and I'm not even playing it or strumming on it. So I forced myself to quit playing that stuff. Nice. I enjoy that stuff. I love that stuff. I love to get on every once in a while or watch somebody else play it. What I liked was the interaction with people in the virtual world, the real interaction you got with people, the banter. Another stunt guy and I used to finish our training, run to the store. I'd grab a 6-pack of beer. He'd grab some granola bars. I played big ogre types. He played these little tiny elven thieves. and you know, as the night would go out and I'd have a few more beers, of course, the ogre got a little more drunk, a little less responsive, and it just became the character. It was fun. It was fun, and we actually would look forward on Friday nights to our virtual meeting place with friends from who knows where around the world to get together and, you know, battle the Midgardians or slay some dragons and, you know, try to take over some castle keep. So I love that stuff. And I'm very familiar with that stuff. You know, I played D&D when I was a kid. I loved all of that stuff. And I think that's why I really understand what the end product is for the motion capture stuff that we do. But you're right. I don't really have a lot of time to play that stuff now that I'm trying to develop some of my own shows. And I'm trying, you know, as an actor, you're always trying to keep work coming in. Unless you're a giant name that, you know, box office draw, and even those guys are trying to produce stuff that keeps them relevant. You're spending a lot of time maintaining your skill sets and trying to make the next job the big job that's going to set you up and afloat for a while. That's what I spend a lot of my time doing. That and reading a little bit more in my leisure time. Right now I'm writing an independent film, so that's kind of taking up quite a bit of my time, and it's requiring a lot of research. And as I'm researching, it's becoming a bigger topic than I originally expected. So anyway, that's the answer. Without trying to drone on for too much longer.
Well, speaking of video games, I thought Mortal Kombat Legacy was awesome. How did you get involved with that? And in general, are you a fan?
You know, I used to play the arcade game. I used to go to the 7-Eleven when I was a kid and play the arcade game. So, again, I was familiar with it, but I can't say that I was or wasn't a fan, because right as that game was becoming popular, I was moving to Southern California and trying to work on a career as an actor. So I was really trying to focus on getting work. As far as the series went, I got very lucky that the stunt coordinator recommended, he'd known me from a few jobs that we had done together, and he recommended me to play this character. And the director signed off on it, and they made me an offer that it was not a very extravagant offer. It was a very modest offer. And I thought to myself, this is a wonderful opportunity to play a character and work with a director. Kevin Tantrill is the director. And I had seen some of the stuff, and I knew he was a really good director, and the money didn't matter. It was more important that I had an opportunity to play a role that I knew was going to turn into something hopefully really nice. And it did. And so I'm glad I didn't have my nose in here about the details of the offer they had given me, which is sometimes what you've got to do when you're trying to build a career.
Exactly. Another one of our listeners, and you actually answered this question on Twitter, but I thought
I did. Until I realized that these were questions that they were giving you, then I stopped answering. I'm like, wait a minute.
I was like,
what's going on here? These are questions for the interview. Okay, maybe I shouldn't answer them all because then you want me to talk about.
Monkey Ranger on Twitter, he said, when playing Kenshi, how difficult was it to see with that blindfold?
Two words, blindfold. Or you can combine them into one word, blindfold.
But, well, how did that affect the stunts and portraying Kenshi?
It made them very realistic. I could see a little bit, just a little bit through that blindfold. You know, when we did those night shots, I don't know if it'll ever make it into an outtakes CD or post online, but I actually, when I go to sit down on that log, when we're all sitting around that fire, I missed the log completely and fell on my ass because I couldn't see where the hell I was. And, you know, you have that bandana on, and it sort of makes your eyes, you adjust to the very low level of light. And so when you're taking it off in between shots, you get blinded and it takes a while to adjust. And to go back and forth like that can really cause some issues. So I just kept it on so my eyes could adjust and I could just get used to walking around. I would say I was about 3/4 blinded.
Okay.
Obviously, in order to perform the action and the stuff we were doing, I had to see a little bit, but I couldn't see all that well. I could see I was 3/4 blinded. I could see about 1/4 of my vision. I could see outlines and shapes and if there was, like when we shot the scenes outside and there was a lot of sunlight, then I could see better. I could see about 50%.
Listener Uchi at AnimeRedneck96 asks, we've all heard about pranks on set. What was one of your best or one that happened to you that's particularly memorable?
I don't usually play a lot of pranks on set, and that's only because I'm usually pretty damn busy running back and forth between the choreography and the dialogue stuff. And usually when I'm on set, I'm participating in the choreography and the stunt coordination, so I don't have the time to play a lot of pranks. But my favorite sort of running joke that I let go for a while, or you can call it a prank, was when I first appeared on Power Rangers. None of the actors on the show, when I came onto Time Force, knew anything about the formula of the show or knew anything about how it worked. They were all new to the show. So when I came on this as a sixth ranger, they thought I was there to replace one of them. And I think somebody had sort of was playing a joke on a few of them or one of them and said that to them, and that's sort of how they spread it among themselves. So I knew what was going on, but I thought it was great that for the first 2 or 3 weeks of working with them, there was this aloofness that I had about me because they didn't know what was going on. And I thought it played well into the introduction of the character, so I let it go. I let them believe that I was possibly there to replace one of them. And there was a little animosity from some of them. Michael Capone was a young 18-year-old kid, so he had a lot of bravado, of course, and he felt like he was sticking up a lot, and he would get in my face a little bit here and there, and I just thought it was funny. I just let them think that I was the dickhead there to take somebody's job. And until a couple of episodes went by and it was apparent that I was just there to become the sixth ranger and they sort of started to understand what was going on, then we all became friends. I like all of those guys. Those guys were great to work with.
Yeah, and that definitely played into the shows, the first few episodes that your character Eric was introduced. You could definitely tell.
Yeah. And it helps. It kind of helps to have a little bit of the environment going on around you with the actors. Not that I'm some kind of method actor that thinks there needs to actually be real conflict between me and my castmates. I just thought, why fight it? It's pretty funny. Just let it happen. And that's as close as I ever got to a prank.
Okay.
Chris Ketchum on Facebook wanted to know what your favorite scene from Time Force was.
My favorite scene from Time Force? Gosh. I loved it when I got to become the Quantum Ranger. So I guess I have to say that's my favorite scene from Time Force. Actually, some of my more favorite scenes from Time Force are towards the end as the season got on and when we did the Wild Force crossover. I'd actually have to say my favorite moments working on that series was when we did the Wild Force crossover, because Jason and I had come back after being off the show for almost a year and we were having a good time. And, you know, we have a good rapport with each other, and I think it shows when you watch that crossover.
Definitely. Speaking of the Wild Force crossover, we had a couple related questions. Morphin Legacy said, if you could write your own happy ending for Eric and Taylor, what would it be? And related, Megan at Live Love Jelena said, do you think Eric and Taylor from Wild Force ever got together after reinforcements from the future?
I believe I answered the first question, so we'll leave that one there.
Okay.
Do I believe, you know, as sort of a fanfic perspective, that those two got together? I don't know. Those are two thorny characters, and I can see in real life, I can be honest with you, there was some real chemistry there, but it very much aligns with the character personalities you were watching on the show. So while that never developed into anything longer lasting, it was very interesting and full of sparks.
That's why there is fan fiction. Yeah.
Exactly. It makes for a good fan fiction, though.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they do get together and they go down. I think they do. They did get together after reinforcements in the future, and then it was a very tumultuous, fiery, freaking thunderous relationship. And who knows if one of them hasn't killed each other.
Well, kind of related, Mr. Mike at M. Lunstead on Twitter asked, did you enjoy how Eric's character arc panned out, and would you have changed anything if you could?
Yes, I did enjoy it, and no, I wouldn't change anything. I'd like to think I designed his character arc, because I would go to, I mean, I knew enough about the show to know that this character has to come around by the end of the season. He's the sixth ranger, and in particular this season they also made him red, so he has to come around and be likable. And I kind of knew that Koichi, the executive producer, told me that they weren't going to kill me. They weren't going to follow the Sentai version and actually kill me. They were going to keep me alive, and I thought that was very nice. So I would go to every day after filming, if you wanted, you could go to the library and get, they had a little library, media library, and get the uncut footage of the episodes that were going to be edited. It was all the stuff you had shot the week previous, and watch them. You know, they're called dailies. So I would watch the dailies religiously to see what it was they were printing in my performances, so what performances they were keeping, because after a while I would come up with a few different ways to do stuff, and then watch that and then figure out what I needed to do for the next episode and how that fit into how many episodes I had left to shoot so that I could create this character arc. So I know that, of course, because of the formula of the show, it's written so that the character has to come on, but it still has to be performed that way. So I would go and watch the dailies every day and try to take into account where I was coming from and where I was at the moment and what I was going to... That informed me of what I needed to do for the next few episodes to create that character arc.
Yeah. That seems like something not a lot of actors would take the time to do, to go back and watch their own dailies, or am I wrong in that?
Well, I didn't think I was a good actor then, so I was working really hard to make sure that I could be a good actor. And that was one of the ways. I mean, all my life, everything I've done has been successful because of the amount of time and hard work I've put into whatever it was I was working on. So that was just me being me, doing what I do to try to come out ahead. And I think it worked. I think it worked. And that's why I say there's nothing I would change, because I worked at me every episode, every minute, to try to make it exactly what I expected it to be. I mean, if I could change anything, it would just be that I probably, now that I'm more experienced, I'd probably have some different interesting choices to utilize or to execute, but that's just going to happen as you get more experience at anything you do. You're just going to be better at doing it.
Tim Long on Facebook asked, what was your opinion on having two Red Rangers in the same series?
Oh, it was awesome. Because I was so bummed that I wasn't going to be the Red Ranger, and then suddenly I was the Red Ranger, a Red Ranger. I was just like, oh man, this is perfect. Because remember, I had screen tested, and I didn't get the Black Ranger. They brought me back in, and I think Lightspeed Rescue to play the Blue Ranger part. And the whole time I'm going, man, I want to play the Red Ranger, but I'll get any Ranger I can. I'll just be so freaking that people will love the character over the Red Ranger. I'll just be as badass as I can. And then the comment was, no, you're a little too intense when we lined you up against the other actors playing the Red Ranger, so we can't hire you as the Blue Ranger. That was actually the feedback I had gotten from a buddy of mine who had talked to Koichi, or one of the executive producers, and he said, yeah, well, you didn't get it, and it's because you're too intense as the Blue Ranger. It would have looked like you could have kicked the Red Ranger's ass. That was the comment I got. So finally, when I got a chance to play the Quantum Ranger, and I knew he was a sixth Ranger, and I knew a little bit about what was going on with the character, I understood that this was a moment where I had Koichi pushing for me to come on the show as an actor, and I'm very grateful to him for that. And he was doing it in such a way that the character was going to fit me. So, because I was a green actor, you know, I didn't know much about transforming myself. It was very helpful for me to have him push me for a character that was very similar to my in intensity to my own character. And it was awesome that it was Red. I felt like I got the best of both worlds. I got to be a Red Ranger and I got to be the Sixth Ranger. So that's why I always say the Quantum was the baddest there ever was.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I thought Eric was an awesome character.
And I got to play him as intense as I wanted, and nobody ever told me to pull back. I had to figure out to do that myself if I wanted him to be a likable character. And I would get online, actually, to the forums and read read the fans' reactions, and they hated him. He's such an asshole. And I'm like, whoa. And for a while there, I actually got on, and I would say, well, hey, I'm Dan Southworth. And then somebody went, you're not Dan Southworth. You sweet. Get off here. How could you imitate? And I was like, whoa. And I realized I shouldn't be on those forums anyway. I shouldn't be on TV meeting. I should just be sort of... But I looked at all the forums. I went to all the forums. I watched all the dailies. I looked at the way the fans were reacting. And I would watch how some of the choices I would make as the character, for the character, started to slowly win over some of the fans, which was, for me, a very important growing moment as an actor, because I had to make this character likable. I couldn't just go on and play him as the ultimate badass, because nobody will like him. It's too intense, especially the way I do it. So anyway, I loved it. It was great.
Nice. We actually had one last fun Power Rangers question here.
Sure.
From Cult of Punk on Twitter. And she said, well, a little backstory. In the new the newest season from last year, the Silver Ranger had a similarly named Zord. So she said, how do you feel about the Super Megaforce Silver Ranger also having a Q-Rex Zord? Hashtag there can be only one.
Well, you know, that's the show just not being able to outdo its own previous greatness. That's all I have to say about that. You know, you can only get so high, and then you got to regurgitate the good stuff. It's flattering that they keep bringing back the good stuff. That's all I got to say.
Nice. Moving on to some other roles that you've done. Jen Nugent at Minimoon 132002 said, what was it like to do stunt work on Disney's Kickin' It?
It was a lot of fun. This is a very unfortunate thing that I feel I'm going to say. And perhaps I am very, very wrong, in which case I would be happy to be very, very wrong. But it feels like it's very rare when you get a production of people working together and everybody is just fantastic to work with. You show up to work with a smile. Everybody's fun. From the actors, the kids that were the actors on that show, their parents, the producers. Well, the showrunner was a little prickly at first, but that's just because he's got a big personality and you know, it takes a while to get used to. He's turned out to be a really great guy. He does jujitsu with us, actually, and it's pretty funny because he's a giant 6'3" dude that is a white belt, and he's so powerful he picks you up and smashes you into things until you finally armbar him so he'll stop. But he's a really great guy. I mean, that show, from the grips, the electricians, the directing department, the assistant directing department, the showrunners, the producers, all of them, amazing people to work with, the performers, that's very rare. And so, you know, I don't usually like to work a lot as a stuntman because it's not my focus and my goal, but the advantage I have in having that skill set is, you know, you don't always have work as an actor, so when there's no work going on, I can still get and be on set and watch other people do things and still learn and even steal some good acting stuff from some of the people I see. And in that particular case, I got a chance to even play a lot of villainous characters and exercise my comedic sense and my comedic timing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it turns out I got a little bit of a knack for it. And that's really nice. It's fun. It's fun to do comedy. It's fun to make people laugh. It really is. It's fun to be laughing, and we were always laughing on that show. We were always having a good time. It was one of the most amazing shows I've ever worked on. And, you know, we still got to do fight choreography and wire work on top of that. It was pretty amazing. That will probably be one of the top experiences of my lifetime. That's how rare and amazing that show was to work on.
Wow, that's fantastic. Susan, actually, I was talking to Susan earlier, and she said that you were their favorite guest thug on the show.
Yeah. I was their favorite guest thug. You mean Susan's favorite guest thug?
Susan said that show, you were their favorite guest thug.
Yes, because I was the show's favorite guest thug. The running joke on that show was that I was Seaford's one-man crime spree. And they had sort of threaded together for one of the rap parties a story that links together all of the characters I've played, you know, in such a way that Dan started out as this thug and realized things weren't going well, so he gets a job working for the secret agency and things don't go well there because it was pretty funny. And then what they did by the fourth season was that they actually included in the it's an outtake show reel that they make for the rap party. There's a segment in there where they just start to put arrows in at every single thug that I got to play throughout the four seasons, and it's pretty funny, you know. They'll have like five or six arrows up on all the ninjas. He's this guy, that guy, this guy, this guy too. And it was pretty funny. I mean, it would go like this. They'd be talking, and they're like, "Well, who can we get to get play this guy?" And somebody would go, "Well, get Dan." And then one of the executive producers would say, "Oh, we can't get Dan again. We've seen him." And then my comment would always be, "I'll wear a beanie." And that's why you see me wearing a beanie a lot, you know, for like 50% of the episodes. And then it got to be, well, I'll put a mustache on. And so then it was mustaches and goatees and you know, whenever they could stick me in a bear suit, they stuck me in a bear suit. You know. Yeah, I was happy. I got, you get residuals for that. So that, that's always a nice little good day. And like I said, I actually got to participate in the comedy and be funny. And that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun when you can do that.
Absolutely. Our next listener question comes from Turk Cole on Facebook. When are you going to do more Divergence, and what was your favorite part on it?
My favorite part in Divergence is the interrogation scene with the actor Damien Poitier that plays the best friend, that plays Mark Leonard's best friend. I just thought that, I just like that scene. That's just my, one of my personal favorites. No reason, I just, I really dug the moment, and I thought the writing was really good, and I think the scene's really good. That show is a lot of fun to do. It's on Real House, actually. It's a platform where you can go and download the whole season for, I think it's like $9. You can download 11 episodes, which is 120 minutes of viewing pleasure. we decided to focus on a full-length feature called Kanan. It's a zombie western after we found a home for Divergence. And we're actually, and this is very important, we are working on something, a teaser right now, that we're pretty sure the Ranger fandom is going to go crazy for. So look for it. It will be out. We're in the process of producing it. I would like, my goal right now is to try to create a show that the fandom will enjoy and be able to pick up on where they left off with their old favorite. So,
interesting.
But it won't be, it will be a completely different universe, but it will be the things that they love. So that's what I'm working on. And so that means that Divergence is on a little bit of a backseat for now. I think that what we wanted to do was do a big, big finale, but we realized that by the time we had gotten through 11 episodes, Douglas and I were pretty much drained of our own resources. I mean, we, we pretty much we put that thing together ourselves with nothing at the time, and we needed a break from it. It was very difficult to bring that whole thing together. And once we get some space from it, we may be able to go back and revisit and remake it. And if we can't, because too much time passes, maybe we'll just remake the whole thing with a much bigger budget. It's a good show. It's not dead for us. We just, we've got a few other things that, for timing's sake, I should say, we want to jump on. And the project I just mentioned to you, and I think the fandom is going to really eat up, is one of those things. We think the time is ripe, and we've got to really focus on this now, or we'll lose the window of opportunity.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, our next question comes from Vince at Bryce Packard on Twitter, and he said, what was your favorite toy growing up?
My favorite toy growing up was the Fisher-Price space shuttle that came with the two men in the spacesuit. And you guys know that one? And it had little buttons on the side wing, and you'd press the buttons, and it would make the takeoff sound.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I think it made a laser beam sound. Had the three buttons. And then it made a third button that made a sound. I don't know. I think it was a communication sound. I have no idea. And then my favorite part of that was when you open the bay doors and have that little tiny getaway shuttle.
Right.
That thing rocked. God. And then you could actually put that. Then you could close the doors and you could actually slide so it would sit on top of the space shuttle piggyback style. That thing is my favorite. I loved that thing. Aside from that, it was, you know, I played with Legos a lot, but Constructs. Mm. Constructs was another favorite toy of mine. But the Fisher-Price space shuttle, that was it. That was it. That was the toy.
Nice. Melanie Francisco, you know her as Sarge. She said, here's a question for you. Boxers, briefs, or commando?
I think that's a question for the 18 and over panel.
There you go.
But I will say this. I am somebody who recognizes that there is an appropriate garment for the right situation. There's a right garment for the appropriate situation. And sometimes that means no garment at all is required. And that is my answer to that question. That's my PG answer.
Okay. Well, if you want the rated R answer, you're going to be at a few conventions coming up.
I'll be at Lexington coming up. That's the next one coming up.
we're releasing this on Sunday, so it'll be the next weekend after this releases. And
right.
I'll be there.
I'm looking forward to Lexington. You'll be there at Lexington.
I will be at Lexington, yes.
Great. We'll get a chance to meet.
You're going to be at the Ranger Stomp booth, right?
That's okay. Correct.
I know that Susan and Melanie are putting together the After Dark panel, which I was at that one for Lexington in 2013. It's a freaking riot. At one point, I know Jason Font and Aaron Cahill called you during that one in 2013.
I remember that. I don't remember what I said, but I remember that.
You're going to also be at WonderCon in Anaheim on April 3rd through the 5th.
That's right. I'll be there as well.
And then Ben Hillman on Facebook asked, will you be coming to any cons in New England?
We're working on it. I'm working. Susan has a few contact friends of hers that she's talking to. And then I have a booking agent that works with me and Jason and Aaron. And Jason has finally convinced me that I need to get out and hang out with him a little more. And since I'm the thing that I want to produce that I was telling you about may involve Jason, I want to get out and spend some time hanging out with him and getting around and building an audience. So I'm in. I'm showing up. I'm coming along.
All right.
I'm making the time.
Yeah, I saw you briefly at Paramorphicon. I was at the table with you during breakfast at the VIP.
Okay.
So. Yeah, so I missed you after that. So, yeah, it'll be great to see you at LexCon.
Yes.
If fans want their local convention to have you, they should definitely reach out to the convention and demand Dan.
Yes, I tweeted the booking agent's information so they can get a hold of that. If they want to try to get me to come to their convention, they can get a hold of her and talk to her. Hey, I think Dan should come down here to the Gatorville. I got a gator I'd like him to ride on the back of. I think he'd have a lot of fun. I might be a little too much.
All right. So you've done a lot of roles where you've literally kicked ass. And fans meeting you for the first time might feel a little intimidated. So do you have any advice for them when they meet you for the first time at a convention?
You know, I don't know what to say. I when I meet fans, I don't get a sense that anybody is about to defecate themselves. They're so scared. I understand that some people might be nervous. You know, there's been a few people in my life that I've been nervous to sort of go up and talk to and shake their hands because I was a fan. Don't be afraid to come and say hello. If we're there at a convention, that's what we're there for. We're there to meet with you. And don't be afraid to ask those questions and engage. That's what we're there for, especially if we're at a convention. It's different if you spot somebody having dinner and you just go and sit up next to them and go, hey, man, I'm a big fan. And you sort of encroach on somebody's private time. But I will say this. If I'm at a convention and that means that if I'm after the convention hours or whatever, I'm eating at the convention restaurant or even hanging out at the convention bar, I'm there for you guys. It's one of those rare moments, I think, where it's okay to come up to me at the bar or while I'm having dinner. That's what I'm there for. If I need my privacy, I'll disappear into my room. I don't go off-site when I go to conventions because that's what I'm there for. I'm there to hang out and meet people, and I appreciate that there are people who liked the work that I was doing and am doing. So that's what I'm there for. It's okay. Come on up and say hello.
Very nice advice. Very nice. Dan, where can we find you online?
Right now, there's the Facebook fan page, which is run by Susan and Erica Moore. And it's a great way to – I go on there all the time, and I look at what people are posting and saying and writing. So I will see your stuff. And that's Daniel Southworth at Facebook. And then there's Twitter as well. I actually read what everybody posts on Twitter. And sometimes when I have some time, I do respond. So those are the two best ways at the moment.
Great. Well, Dan, it's been awesome having you on. I'm a huge Time Force fan and a big fan of yours. So
I really appreciate
you taking the time to do this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was fun talking with you guys.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And we'll see you at LuxCon.
Yes, fans should talk to your convention to get in touch with your convention promoter and get them to get in contact with my booking agent, Tabitha Minshew.
All right. Will do.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Dan.
All right. Take care.
You too. See ya.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphing Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ranger Command PH and like us on facebook.com/Ranger Command Power Hour. This is Truckee B47 from the Ranger Command Power Hour, and you are listening to the Four-Eyed Radio Network. Ranger Command is now on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/rangercommandph to learn more. Thanks.
This has been another great presentation by the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can find more information at foureyedradio.com.